You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning from 6:30. This morning I was joined by the former Watford and England legend, Luther Blissett.
This is Love Sport.
Spurs against Man City at the new stadium at Spurs. An enormous game. I mean, really, an enormous game. Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether it's bigger for Spurs or Man City, actually. I mean, I suppose you could say Man City because they're going for the quadruple and all this stuff. But
definitely a bigger game for Man City today. For them, yeah. Because, you know, this...
It's all part of the
project. Yeah, and this one, this trophy, getting to the final of this trophy is ultimate for them.
Yeah, winning the trophy, actually. They really have to win the trophy. Well, it's happening this evening. And what are they saying in the newspapers?
Well, actually, in the Times, Alison Rudd's talking about what Pep Guardiola said. Pep says, actually, we're going for 5 trophies. He says, why is no one talking about the Community Shield?
No one ever talks about the Community Shield, do they, when you win it?
Jose talks about it.
Well, but Jose, even if he plays tiddlywinks, he counts that. Well,
they do take it more seriously in Europe than we do here. That's what Guardiola's saying. So when we went up with Barcelona, we're already saying, you know, we won one trophy this season. They win the next cup. Well, we've got two. Whereas here, he says, well, if we win the league this year, I'm not going to play it next year. What's the point? You don't talk about it. So what's the point in playing it?
Well, I mean, he basically said, if we don't play it, we get a bit of a longer holiday. And that's quite nice and everything. I mean, either it is a trophy or it isn't. But we've never taken it seriously. All the serious managers up to this point have basically, they've never, except for Jose.
But that is only in the sort of the middle to latter part of the Premier League era. Before that, that first game of the season was all, remember, sendings off in the first game of the season. We've seen him.
Kevin Keegan and Billy Bremner having a punch up on the pitch on the way out.
Because that's what it was like back then, you know. Every game you played was that. It's only since the Premier League, and they just look at it as a bit of a practice game to get the season on the way.
Yeah. Right. Well, he thinks they're going for 5 rather than 4 trophies anyway.
The quintuple, Ben. That's what it is.
Is that the quintuple?
The quintuple, yes. Won, in fact, by Celtic in the past. Celtic won a quintuple back whenever it was. Yeah. When they won the European Cup in 67, they won every trophy available to them.
Right.
And that's what City are going for.
Yeah. Right. Well, Poch is going to try and stop them. He's come up against Guardiola 14 times. He's won twice. One of those was when he was manager of Espanyol in La Liga, and Poch and Guardiola hadn't lost at home with Barcelona, and he managed to beat them 2-1. And 7 years later with Spurs, he managed to beat them 2-0 at White Hart Lane. Apart from that, Guardiola's had his way in the other 12 meetings.
Guardiola's had better teams than Poch.
Well, one was when they were playing with Barcelona and Espanyol. So, I mean, that was
local
classes,
derby.
Local derby, but different class.
Sure. I mean, look, I think Poch, I mean, it's funny actually, because both myself and Luther sat here and were saying, wouldn't put it past Tottenham to win this game tonight.
I think they'll go through overall. I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
Are you having money on that? Because if you do think that, then they've got to be longer odds than Man City. They have to be.
Oh, yeah, they will be. I haven't looked at the odds, but they will be. Just think Man City are going for so much, and they did concede chances to Brighton the other day. Yes, maybe they weren't in top gear. Yeah, but they only scored one goal. If that goes in, if Brighton get that late equaliser, then it's extra time and penalties. And Spurs, at home in this new stadium, are going to offer so much more. And like Guardiola says, talking about it in the papers today, you know, they only need 3 chances, get 3 goals. When Liverpool beat Manchester City last year, Pep said, actually, we played all right. You know, we went 3-0 down. They had 3 chances, they scored them all. And, you know, Dele Alli, Harry Kane, Son, more than capable of taking their early chances.
Very true.
Yeah, you know what? I agree. But as Luther said, this is the one for City. You know what? The Arab owners did not get involved to win a League Cup and an FA Cup and even a league more than once or twice. They came here to win the Champions League 3
Absolutely.
Or 4 times.
Yeah.
And that's what they want to do. And I think, I don't know. I mean, obviously there's massive pressure on Manchester City, but they are a fabulous team with better players around the pitch than Spurs.
No doubt about it, they are. But we've all seen games where the better team, for whatever the reason is, comes in the night when they don't really turn up, not to what they have done in the past.
Two games, though. Man United and PSG was definitely one of those games a few weeks ago. And it could happen again.
Yeah.
But I think Spurs need a tremendous amount of luck to beat them over 2 legs. I'm not saying they're not a good team. They're an excellent team, Tottenham. But I just think, you know what? 8 times out of 10, Man City are winning this time.
Oh, I wouldn't say 8 out of 10.
Wouldn't you?
No, not 8 out of 10. Yeah, better team. Will they have more chances over the 2 legs? I think chance-wise, it won't be too different. Maybe Man City might have a couple more, but at this level, all it takes is for a couple of Son's shot, Harry Kane and Son to score, whereas Sterling to hit the post, and then that's the difference.
Yeah, I mean, the difference that will come with Man City is Tottenham can put pressure on their back four, and that makes a difference. There's not too many teams that can put that pressure on that. You think if you give them a sniff, they'll score from it. But that is what Tottenham will do if they get that chance.
I mean, I watched Tottenham against Liverpool the other week, and Spurs were unlucky not to get a point from that game. And do you know what? That could happen again. But over two legs, I just feel that those really top teams will beat Tottenham.
Yeah.
But
they could be. I tell you, they could be more vulnerable actually on their home leg than the away one. Because it's been proven so far in the Champions League this last few years that your home one is the one that most teams are vulnerable on.
Well, Tom Clark in the Times saying target the left-back area. Zinchenko struggling with injury.
He's not playing tonight.
No, he's injured. I think him and Delph are both ruled
Mendy's
out.
Mendy's there, isn't he?
So you've got Mendy, who's just back from injury.
He's never been a great defender anyway. He likes to go that way, but he's not one of the best defensive. No.
Yeah, better going forward. And Danilo, who's normally a right-back, potentially playing left-back. So that potentially could be an area to target.
He might even play Laporte over there, to be honest, if he really fancies it. And I've seen Laporte play over there in the past.
Yes, he did that. Did he do that against Liverpool?
I think he might have done. I think he did it last season a couple of times. Listen, they've got plenty of talent, Man City. And by the way, they've got some serious talent going forward as well.
Oh,
They've got Aguero as one of the best strikers I've ever seen.
Yeah, they'll be favourites.
Well, but I think they are favourites.
But in that second game in the new stadium, that atmosphere, I just feel like Spurs could nick something tonight and then take it to Manchester and get something.
If you're an away player going to Spurs' new stadium, are you not pumped to play in a stadium like that?
You're really looking forward to it. Because
it could inspire you.
It is, because what you're thinking, just think we could be the first team that beats them on this.
That is
a big, big thing. And Tottenham will be completely aware of that. That could be which is why they didn't especially want to be playing their nearest and dearest in that one, did they? Didn't want to be playing you guys.
No, they certainly didn't want to open up with that. There's no doubt that Man City did get a little bit intimidated by Anfield last year in that quarterfinal, but I think it was more the drive in, to be honest. I genuinely do.
That would have played a big part in it.
When you see the documentary about Man City and that quarterfinal, when they come off the coach, they are shaken. And Liverpool exploited that, and the noise and the emotion, and it's Anfield on a European night. Whether Spurs can generate that sort of emotion, it's not just about the noise, it's about the emotion as well. And I don't know if Tottenham can do that. They might be able to. Listen, you're laughing at me because I'm
can't
saying
generate
this like
the emotion.
Well,
he's saying it like
they're passionate.
Do you think he's a closet Tottenham fan deep down?
Why do you even say that? I don't understand.
He's from North London. They're a North London club, aren't they?
I'm Jewish. They like the Jews. I think Anfield is different from anywhere else. I do. I think Anfield is one of those. Roma has it. You played at Roma, right? When they beat Barcelona last year. Yeah.
You got Roma and Napoli over in that place.
You haven't seen the new White Hart Lane on a European night, though. Well, oh, that is a sight to behold. That white wall. Oh.
Well, we'll see later on, won't we? Yeah, we will. And I want to know about the money as well. I want to know what the odds are.
Love sports.
Jamie has come in to go through stories. You know, Champions League is like a competition for big clubs, Jamie. What have you got? Actually, I could have said that to you, Luther, as well. But I decided not to. What have you got, Jamie?
I think you just did.
I think I just did, what have we got?
There is a story. Cornish people are getting a bit unhappy because during weather forecasts, the BBC's weather people keep standing in the way of Cornwall.
Do they?
They keep, and they're going, hang on a minute.
What about us? Where's our county?
Especially as
can't even see us, can they, Maud?
And the Scilly Isles are also being excluded.
Do you know, I don't even know where the Scilly Isles are, to be honest with you.
Near Cornwall.
Is that right?
Yeah, just south of Cornwall.
Anything down there? Yeah, well, maybe it's just the unfortunate shape of the country.
Just north of Cornwall. Might be just north, just on the north of Cornwall. Anyway, they're down on that side anyway. But because that bit comes out, so I guess it is easy for weather people just to stand there.
Well, that's where they stand. You know, that position is where they stand to do their bit.
Well, if they stood the other side of Land's End, they'd have to sort of arch their body to reach the main body of England, wouldn't they?
I was going to say, if they stood right out of the way of the whole of the UK... then they'd have to bend over to point over and at Ipswich and Norwich.
And have a very long cane to bridge across.
They'd have a long cane to get through Cornwall and the rest of the country.
They'd have to extend the cane to get to Cornwall. And now, Cornwall, and they've been like a rest in snooker. It's what they do, they get the rest.
I'm just going to let them down.
Screw the extra bit on and point at Cornwall. I think it's a bit unfortunate, but, you know, I don't care. I think it's the bottom line. And I think a lot of people don't. But if there was any, let's say that there was a major weather event happening in Cornwall, they would move, wouldn't they? And by the way, in Cornwall, there's going to be a hurricane or whatever it is.
Something's actually happening there, they'd be saying.
But Cornwall shouldn't have to wait till it gets a hurricane to be included in the weather forecast.
Well, no one.
But everybody knows what the weather's like in Cornwall. It's always decent.
Warmer. Malcolm Bell of Visit Cornwall says they've got their own microclimate, people are ignoring.
Well, it's not ignoring it. We just know the weather's nice.
And it's such a long journey to get there.
You know, because at the end of every weather forecast, they went, and it's nice in Cornwall, as always. They didn't even need to tell, because they don't need to say it. We all know it's nice in Cornwall. So, you know, it's taken as red, isn't it? It's one of those things.
Not always nice. If it's nice in the rest of the country, sometimes Cornwall can actually be a bit cloudy.
No.
Yep.
Right.
Because that happened when it was a heat wave everywhere else. I went down to Cornwall and it was cloudy.
But why'd you go down to Cornwall if it was a heat wave everywhere else? Might as well stay around. Yeah, you don't need a 9-hour drive, do you? Listen, it's lovely down there. We went down there last year. We were in St Ives. Absolutely gorgeous.
It is, yeah.
Gorgeous down there.
Got a quiz question for you.
Have you?
Yeah, because it was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire the other day and I like this question.
How much was it for?
I think it's about 16,000 maybe.
Right, okay.
Around that mark.
Right.
If you were to go to Land's End and then go due south, straight south from Land's End, what country would you hit? Would it be France, Spain, Portugal or Morocco?
Well, it's either... It's not Spain. It isn't Spain. I'm pretty certain of that. I would go Morocco.
Morocco.
I would go Morocco.
Spain.
We'd have lost 16,000. If you were my friend...
It's Spain, because I was thinking... France basically goes out and covers a bit of Cornwall, but if you actually go as far as Land's End and go down, you miss France and you go straight down to Spain.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'd have lost money there, wouldn't we?
Why did you think not Spain?
Because I thought that Portugal covered the left side, the what do they call it? Not the Balkans, the...
The Iberian Peninsula.
The Iberian Peninsula.
But actually Portugal covers the southwest part, but not the top bit Spain covers. Right. So actually there's no Portugal border at the top of it.
Oh, right. Okay,
that's a good question.
Why did you ask us that?
Well, I just saw him, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and I thought it was a good question.
He just wanted to show us how much clever he was, and that's what it is. That's what
I didn't say I got it right.
did you get it right?
I did, though.
You got it right, didn't you? Okay, well done.
Thanks very much.
Well done, you're 16 grand richer than us.
There's another story here.
Is it still on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Is this a new one?
Every now and again they do...
Jeremy Clarkson.
Yeah, they do a week every night of the week with Jeremy Clarkson.
Right. Okay, so but he doesn't seem to know the answer.
And you should never ask him what the answer is.
Because you've
never got one right.
You can ask him, but you've got to make sure you do that in one of the first few questions, because if you get past about 16, then he's got no clue.
No idea.
Unless it's about motor racing. And even then, he's not that convinced. Because they had, what sport might you find the gurney flap? And it's a part of a wing in motor racing. You might know Luther. And Clarkson didn't really know, and it went to 50-50 cycling or motor racing, and he was like, well, I know there was a racer called Gurney who raced for Ford, but I don't know about the Gurney flap.
Alright.
And then sure enough it was motor racing, so.
Okay.
But at least he got it right.
If you've got Jeremy Clarkson there, if he doesn't know about racing or cars, what is the point of view?
You have a problem.
I would say so. Okay, what else you got?
Well, there's a new thing that could help dementia or schizophrenia sufferers. Basically, what they've done is, this is in America, they've sent electricity through people's brains using electrodes. And they found that when they did this, these old people, over 65s, had the mental capacity of when they were 20s.
And that was permanently or just while they were being electrical?
That only lasted a few minutes,
right.
But they reckon they could get it lasting a few hours and potentially in the future for a longer time. But yeah, for those few minutes, and their memory was as good as when they were youngsters.
Can you have it when you're about maybe 60, 61, do you think? Would help?
Yeah, we could try it out. I'll tell you what, Luther, next Tuesday when you're in, I'll try and get some of this
Get it in, we'll
equipment.
Have a go.
Stick your finger in a light socket. See how that goes. Luther, tell us what you're thinking. Oh, I feel so lucid. There's so much I remember. I remember scoring a goal when I was 21. Yeah, okay. I mean, the thing is, they have tried electroshock therapy on patients. We've all seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I say we've all.
No, I have. You haven't. I have, actually.
Have you?
I have. That's a classic. Of course I have. Of course I have.
Okay.
Yeah, pensioners who've lost brain power through aging had the same mental capacity as those in their 20s. So they reckon, yeah, well, this one lasted 50 minutes, but in the future could solve schizophrenia, autism, Alzheimer's. I mean, I think we're going a bit far if we say it can cure all those things, but it could help to treat them.
Right. Well, okay.
So what they're saying, all those quacks that used to say electricity is a cure, they were right.
They might have been right, but obviously you've got to get the dose right, because you could actually kill someone with electricity, couldn't you? Oh, we almost cured him, but he's dead. We electrocuted him instead. That's not what we needed. Come on, we can't give it another go. Next.
This is Love Sport.
Now, Luther has been involved in a slight little tiff this week, because you were critical of Raul Jimenez, the Wolves striker, yeah, when he scored the second goal and he put a mask on, which was a Mexican superhero, was that right? Or a Mexican wrestler?
Wrestler, yeah.
A Mexican wrestler.
That's right.
And basically, you were accused of racism.
Because they're saying, because it's part of their culture, you know, the wrestling and the mask they wear and all that, you know, that I'm being racist for doing that.
Yeah.
You know, what they've got to understand is I am, and always have been, against all those over-exaggerated celebrations when goals are scored.
Right.
Right? When Aubameyang does it, I'm like, why do that sort of thing, yeah? Regardless of what the mask is, you know?
Well, and Aubameyang was a superhero,
yeah, he
it?
Did Black Panther, didn't
right.
he?
Right, okay.
And he's got other masks as well that he's used when he was at Dortmund and whatever, apparently. So,
okay.
Yeah, but I've all that sort of thing for me is I just don't understand why you need to do that. And that is the reason. And they're saying that I'm being racist for doing that.
Who's
maybe
saying, by the way?
Someone on whatever. Maybe I used the wrong word saying it was offensive. What I find, I just find it, why? Yes, I'm an old dude. I'm 61 years old right now. But I love to see, when you score the goal, you celebrate it. And if you're going to celebrate it, why not just see your smiling face doing it rather than put a mask and cover your face up?
Yeah.
You know?
We all remember Barry Davis's commentary when, I can't remember, I think it might have been Francis Lee scored a goal in the 70s, and he's going, look at his face. Just look at his face. It was one of the great bits of commentary. Obviously, you can't do that with Jimenez, because you can't just look at his, oh, we can't see his face.
But that's what it is. You know, you look at all the great moments. I think back to it in the World Cup in 82 when the midfield player scored for Italy in that game. And that is what a celebration is, you know, and that everything about his face and everything tells you what that meant to him. That is where I'm coming from this, and they can call me an old whatever they like. It's just how it is. I'm sorry. If they find it offensive, I'm sorry that you do that on that one, because I don't go out to offend people. I will tell you what I think. And I just think that when it comes to celebrating a goal, there is no reason to be having to make some sort of statement every time you make a goal. Your statement you've made, stick the ball in the back of the net. That is how you make your statement.
Yeah, and let's be fair. It was just a couple of people on Twitter who were talking about your cultural insensitivity because it's part of Mexican culture. But in the end, most people, you're an ex-striker with a great record. You've played for Watford, you've played for England, you've played for AC Milan. Mm. You know, you play for proper clubs.
Yeah.
And it's all about the fun of scoring goals and the celebration.
Yes.
And I agree with you completely. I'm not Mexican. Maybe what we need is somebody from Mexican to come on and go, well, it was, I almost did the accent there, but I thought that would
no,
be racist.
Not the right time to do it, no.
I didn't.
You resisted it very well.
Thank you. It was quite difficult because I like having a bit of fun. But no, maybe someone from Mexico to come on and say, well, this is a very important part of our culture. But we all know that it wasn't about that. It wasn't a cultural thing. It was obviously a cultural thing in the sense that that was the mask that he chose.
Yeah.
But in the end, it was about the you know, in all the papers. And I guess back in Mexico, they would show a picture of Jimenez with that mask on and everyone go,
like they have done in a lot of the papers here from the fact that he scored a goal with that. But that's the sort of thing it's like when players pull their shirt up and I've got things written on their shirt and stuff like that. I'm saying that's not what you're out there to do. If you want to do that when you're in your own time or when you're away from the thing you're there to do, to play football.
The messages on the shirts, sometimes when they, you know, they've got to know a kid who's not very well or something like that, or a teammate has died, and I sort of feel slightly differently about that.
It's, yeah, again, as you say, that is, you make a slight distinction here, but still then again, my thing is that there is no need for you to be doing that at that time. You know, there are other ways that you can do it rather than... Because if everybody's going to be doing messages all the time, you've been like, oh, what's going to be on this message when they lift their shirt up this time?
I liked it when Wrighty did the 179, but he did it for the wrong goal. Yeah, that was really funny. Yeah, but, he got excited.
Yeah, but that's quite a simple one. You see that and everybody knows what that is. That is, you know, that is a landmark that he's struck by scoring that goal. And you can understand a little bit that.
Yeah.
But what he's done, you know? But,
I mean, you know what? I understand the whole thing that maybe in Mexico, if he'd have scored, if that would have been the winning goal in the Cup semi-final, back in Mexico, there would have been pictures of the Mexican boy playing brilliantly in the Premier League. And let's be fair, he's a fantastic striker.
I think he's absolutely magnificent. I keep looking at him and saying, I'd love to have seen that him playing for Watford, because he's an exceptional goal scorer.
Yeah.
And what a very good striker. And, you know, no, and I'll say it now, if it has caused anybody any offence, I'm really sorry for what I've said for that, but it was not my intention. And I know people say, but I didn't go out to offend anybody, but that, goodness me.
No, you were talking about it purely in terms of the fact that he's a striker, he scored a goal, and let's see his face.
Yeah.
Let's see his smiling face.
See,
and also, by the way,
your face.
Slight disrespect to Watford. Well, we're still 20 minutes
to
go.
Well, you see, but that is the other side of it for me, because you've done that, and then the game has completely turned on. It said Watford's won it. You go back to that, and you're thinking, what was that all about now from that? And that has really diminished everything that he wouldn't do, apart from everyone wants to talk about it now. You know, it has diminished the fact that he did that.
Yeah.
You know, when Aubameyang's at it, the game is won, and he's got the mask on and say, yeah, but, you know, why? Why? Why do that?
And by the way, it was an absolutely fantastic goal that he scored, because we've talked about that Watford-Wolves game.
And that was a
fabulous bit of play that he did there as a striker. And you appreciate the chest
I appreciate so many things, because I've seen him when he's get that ball and he's running at three different players and he's moving left, right the way he does, and he still gets the shot away or whatever. Yeah. He is an exceptional player, no doubt about it. And I've admired everything about him especially since he's been playing in England.
Just don't wear the mask.
But that, I just don't see the need for it.
No.
Love Sports.
Well, joining us now is the former Chelsea winger, Clive Walker. Good morning, Clive.
Good morning.
Clive, how are you doing?
Luther, yeah, well, thank you.
That goal last night from Eden Hazard, in fact, that whole display, he just knew he was the best player on the pitch, didn't he?
That's a really good point. Yeah, I think he does. I think sometimes he goes out there with a mentality that tonight's the night for me. And I think, you know, Luther will tell you that, you know, sometimes you go out there with that feeling that, you know, you're going to play well, possibly score, but you're just going to just show how good you are, what skills you have. And I think last night was a perfect example of how good and the top quality that Eden Hazard is.
But do you think that is the whole point of players getting to the next level, which I think we can say that Eden Hazard is at, is that... We know he's had the ability, but it's about that belief. Oh yeah, I am that good now.
I think sometimes, I mean, we had the opportunity to interview him afterwards, and he's such a level-headed person that I don't think he actually knows how good he is and how much he actually excites the fans. And I think when he's on form, or like he was last night, and to be honest, you know, the guy's... Yeah, we've had the pleasure of watching him for, 7 years now. And out of that 7 years, you know, 75% of that has been in top form. And we have to admire players of that level that can and perform to that level, you know, week in and week out, and excite fans and get them out their seats and cheer for him. You know, he's got that extra special thing that only comes around sometimes. You know, we can talk about the Lionel Messis and the Ronaldos, but there's been the great players of the past, you know, the Pelés and all that. But, you know, he's, and the George Best, of course, but he's up there with them.
Yeah.
And I think he's just such a nice guy, but he's got so much ability. And not only that, his all-round game is terrific. He does get kicked. He does get brought down time and time again. But he just picks himself up and gets on with it. Doesn't really complain. And he's just a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, no, he is definitely that. I mean... Him, I think, I look at him and I think, Mr. There's very similarities to some of the things that you used to do, Clive. And this is not me just being flippant about it. I think there is. And with, I think if you were allowed the freedom like he can to come inside and drift into those holes, you know, you'd have been thought of, I think, in very similar vein, because you were one of those players that we used to hate. Because whenever you come up against Chelsea and think Clive Walker's on anything, yeah, just what we don't need today. You know, so teams do look at that when they're going to play him. And as you said it yourself, that he is brilliant in the fact he gets knocked around so much, but he just gets on with it. How are they ever going to replace him, Clive?
Good point, Luke.
When he goes.
Yeah, I think, well, it's very kind of what you just said, but, you know, obviously the game was totally different 30 years ago. And when you got kicked, as you well know, you got kicked properly.
Yeah.
And to bounce back up again. And that was the hardest thing for me, was being consistent. Well, I think in today's modern game, you can be consistent more as a winger because the nature of the game. And I think, you know, the likes of Willian and Pedro and himself and, you know, these guys, and Callum Hudson-Odoi now, of course, you know, these guys, you know, do get kicked, but it's not getting kicked like we did in the old days. And they're able to bounce back up again. And that's a good mental attitude for those guys to play. Going back to your second part of your question, you know, replacing him is impossible.
Yeah.
You know, to find someone of that calibre, that quality, as I said, they only come around now and then. And to find someone who can actually play to that level like he does is impossible. You just can't find someone else. If he does leave, you know, I think Chelsea fans have got to say, it'll be a sad day, of course, but I think you've got to say we've had 7 years of watching this guy improve, perform, excite us, score goals, and all those things in one package has been a special 7 years. So I think you've got to say, fair enough, you know, it's his time. You've got to accept that if he's going to leave, and it looks like if it's going to be, it's going to be Real Madrid. So, you know, the only thing I would say, Luther, is hopefully if we can somehow, and I'm not sure how, sneak into the top four, because a month ago it didn't look likely. Yeah. If we can sneak into the top four and play Champions League football next year, maybe that'll help us persuade him in some way, shape or form. Whether it'll work or not, I don't know, but that might help us on our way to keeping him.
Do you think that part of the reason that he's starting to play Hudson-Odoi now and Loftus-Cheek is because he is looking to the future and thinking, we need to see how some of these other players are going to perform if Eden Hazard is no longer around?
I guess partly, but I think the main reason is these two in particular lads, Christensen's another one, that they're playing well enough to play. Yeah. I mean, you can't play them if they're not good enough. And these kids are playing. You know, they'll be given time on the pitch. They're showing their skills. They're showing their ability. They're improving with every second that they play football. And I think when you've got the young players doing that, you have to give them their head. I don't think, again, you know, in the past, you know, you play really well and you stayed in the team for week after week after week. Well, the way the game is these days, we need to rotate. We need to have players as fresh as possible. And, of course, when you get youngsters fresh and strong and powerful, they're going to keep coming back time and time again. They bounce back from being left out or just having a rest for 1 week, and they come back again. And you've got to give them credit. They're in there on their merits. And, you know, obviously we'll rotate again on Thursday in the Europa League, because that's what's happened all season. But now we find that where Pedro and William maybe were getting a start, and Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Callum were only playing in that league, you're now seeing that it's been rotated. It's turned around, which is great.
Yeah. Clive, we'll leave it there. Nice to speak to you.
Thanks, guys.
See you soon. Former Chelsea winger Clive Walker there talking about Chelsea last night. They won 2-0. Stunning. Stunning performance from Eden Hazard. If he does leave, we'll miss him in the Premier
this
League.
This is Love Sport.
Jamie has come into the room. He's opened it up. But what looks like serious stories in the newspapers. Have I got that right?
This isn't a serious story.
Oh, good.
No, that wouldn't be like me, would it?
No.
With something actually with any substance to it. This is Day Trippers who got stranded on Puffin Island by a faulty ferry. Now,
there was a major fault in the ferry, and they were there. I thought it was Lundy Island, wasn't it?
No, Puffin Island. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, well, it's Lundy, officially Lundy Island.
Right, but they call it Puffin Island. The puffins have taken over, have they?
Pretty much.
This is now Puffin Island. They planted a puffin flag, puffed their chest out, and when we are here now, try and get rid of us.
Yeah,
right?
You can't move for puffins on this island. It's 12 miles off the North Devon coast. And yeah, like you say, the ferry took them over there, dropped them off, and then went back to Devon and then the ferry broke down, so it couldn't go and pick him up. Now, you'd have thought they'd go and send someone else
out. Send another boat.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure why they didn't do that, but they ended up having to sleep sleep on the floor of the church.
Oh.
Some people had planned to stay there for a while, so they'd booked hotels, but I imagine there's not that many hotels on Puffin Island.
I shouldn't think so. No. And they're full of puffins, yeah, aren't they?
Puffins taking all the rooms anyway.
And the puffins are completed, so they come from all over the world, puffins, to stay there, because they never learned to be amongst their own, didn't they?
Yeah.
So they're lying on the floor of the church, being pet by puffins all night, horrendous night.
Two nights, in fact. Two nights they had to stay over.
Right, okay. No ill effects? Puffin-related diseases?
No, the puffins are a clean bunch. So they don't spread any diseases.
They don't carry anything particularly dangerous to humans.
No, you're...
All right, okay, well, that's a relief, isn't it?
Yeah. John Snow's been investigated by Ofcom.
This is the Channel 4 news presenter who was looking at the pro-Brexit march and said it's the whitest march he's ever seen. It's just all white people.
Yeah.
In fact, he said, I've never seen so many white people in all my life. He should have got a Queen's tennis ball. Because I tell you what, he would have seen plenty of white people there. I went with a black friend and let me tell you, he was the only black person there. Yeah. The only one.
I went a number of years ago and yes.
You do feel a little bit self-conscious?
Yeah, even more than I ever did.
And it must happen quite a lot. Yeah. You go to events, it's mainly white people, and he pointed it out. Were you offended? I mean, you're a Brexit voter, right?
Yeah.
But were you offended? Because it did feel a bit virtue signalling, as you said.
Yeah, not offended. Yeah, I felt like he was virtue signalling a bit. But also the point was made quite rightly that if you look at the Remain march,
also pretty white.
Very, very white.
Pretty
so
white,
I mean, yeah,
it was.
White people love a march.
That's what it is. White people love marching. It's nothing to do with black and white. Do black people not like marching? Is that what it is, Luther? I mean, I'm asking.
If we're going to a football match or a cricket match or something like that, have a go, or, you know, have a bit of fun. Why
if you're angry enough about something, you'll march for it. That's true. But there's no doubt that both marches were very white.
And actually a third of BAME voters voted leave. So the point he was making was this: all white people voted leave,
incorrect.
I think, and it was incorrect.
Was incorrect. So he's now being investigated by Ofcom.
Had loads of complaints, yeah, thousands of complaints, so Ofcom are investigating him.
It's weird, though, isn't it, being racist towards white people?
Well, yeah.
It's about time we got some, isn't it, really? Frankly, it's nice to take the load off for a little bit. Okay, all right, we'll keep you up to date with what's going on with that.
Yeah, the Radio Times have listed the British sitcoms in order of how brilliant they all are. Can you guess what came top?
I know.
Yeah, so do I. 40 Tales.
40 Tales did win it.
I'm not surprised. What else is in there?
Father Ted came second.
Fabulous.
Third place, I'm Alan Partridge. Blackadder, Dad's Army, Only Fools and Horses, Porridge, The Royal Family, Ab Fab, Din Ladies, The Thick of It, The Office. The Office down in 12th. I'm sorry, I'm not having that.
Yeah, but you haven't seen some of the others, have you?
Which ones?
I mean,
ones
are you Porridge have you seen?
I haven't seen Porridge, no.
No, Porridge is a work of genius.
I've seen all of them, I think, apart from... I haven't seen much of Dinner Ladies or Porridge. All the rest I've seen.
Yeah.
Above
so
that.
The food-related ones, you're basically not watching.
I avoid them.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, make me hungry.
I'm getting that. Listen,
40 Towers is timeless and brilliant.
It is. The Office is great. There's no doubt about it. And, but hey, it's just people voting and people have voted. The people have spoken, Jamie. You of all people should be keen on something like that. Listen, they're all. I think they're all really, really good. That's the truth of it. I'd be happy to watch pretty much all of them, I think. And the fact that The Office is down in 12th place doesn't really mean anything to me. I'm just
doesn't bother you that?
No, not really.
You won't be asking for a second vote.
No. Back at me. No, I won't. No, anyway. The will of the people has said that 40 Towers number one. And I must admit, I watched the 40 Towers a few months ago. Still really funny. Still really funny. They're beautifully put
together.
It's
crazy how it is still funny.
Yeah, it still works 40 years later.
Yeah, it does, doesn't
so,
it?
So, I don't mind that, really.
Right, good. Well, we sorted that one.
Right.
Australia's vegans are on a bit of a warpath. Loads of them.
Vegans on the warpath? Imagine how dangerous they could be.
I know. Well, they're targeting farms and abattoirs across Australia. They did it yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, called them un-Australian and green-collar criminals. But yeah, they're properly good. I mean, we've heard about...
Green-collar criminals. That is ridiculous.
We've heard about them in Britain going into steakhouses and trying to upset all the diners and that.
We have.
But apparently they've gone a bit further in Australia, literally really targeting abattoirs and farms. And we also heard about the vegans who waited outside abattoirs and then when the lorries got there full of the animals, they just used to go, "I'm sorry, I love you," through the windows to the animals. but none in England, as far as I'm aware, have actually like targeted farms and abattoirs.
When you say targeted, what have they done?
Stopped them from working, stormed them.
It's a bit unfortunate, isn't it? Because you've got these people who just, they do these jobs. But vegans, these are radical vegans who do genuinely believe, and they're right, that the animals are suffering to feed us. It's not great. I don't know, when you start on someone who's just doing a job working in an abattoir, I don't know if I really approve of that.
Yeah.
I don't think they care if I approve or not, to be honest. But I'm just saying, seems a bit unfortunate, really.
Yeah,
they're just making the point, aren't they? Meat is murder and all that.
Yeah, I think when they go and storm steak houses and stuff, they've got a point, and I don't eat red meat, but I think quite a lot of people, you just get brought up eating meat, and then you slip into the habit, so you're not thinking...
Yeah, but just because you slip into the habit of doing something...
I know.
You know, it doesn't mean that it's right. And I say this having had some red meat in the last few days, but it doesn't mean, you know, we all know. You can't use the excuse that you don't know the suffering that the animals go through. You just choose to go to let them go through suffering because it's very tasty.
You turn a blind eye to it a bit, don't you?
I think
if people were to visit abattoirs, they might be less inclined to eat meat.
I would suggest that is the case. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Once it's in its packet in Sainsbury's.
Yeah, there was a program. They did a program, didn't they, a few years ago, which was that from literally from the farm. And you have to follow the process all the way through.
It's not pleasant, is it?
Put it in a plate, yeah.
It's not pleasant. So, you know what? Like I've always said, in the end, we'll have to kill... I think we should have to kill the animals ourselves. And then at least, blood on our hands. But you know what? If that's how much you want to eat meat, you go ahead and kill the animals.
There would be a lot less meat consumption.
I would suggest so, very little.
Still be a few happy to do it.
Yeah, there would. I wouldn't be eating meat now, though, because I couldn't do that. I caught a fish once and I couldn't even bop it on the head.
Yeah.
You know, and this is fish for dinner.
Did you not have it in the end?
No, I got my mate to pop it on there.
And then you had it.
And then I cooked it and all it was nice. It was.
Apparently, a lot of homeowners regret compromising on location. A quarter of those who buy outside their target area or sacrifice a garden are left ruining their decision. Did you compromise at all when you bought your house?
Well, everyone compromises when they buy their house. Unless you're a billionaire, you have to compromise. And you go, well, what can I give up? And you say, well, I really want an amazing kitchen, but I can do without a garden.
Yeah.
I really need a garden, but I could live 10 miles further out. Everybody compromises.
Compromise. You have to, even the billionaires have to, because you buy it and you think, you buy it and I'll change that, and that, and I get what I want.
It's never perfect, is it?
No, it isn't. But you try and find the thing that is closest to what you think is the most important thing.
Most likely to compromise on price, decor, location, room size and garden. And one in five of those who paid more than they planned wished they hadn't. So I guess that's both sides of the stick, isn't it? Like if you pay more, you wish you hadn't. But if you compromise and don't pay more, then
pay the most you can, but don't leave yourself in dire financial straits. Yeah. Just try and find the best you can and then put up with the rest. Try and change it.
Yeah.
This is Love Sport.
Joining us now is the former Spurs winger Mickey Hazard. Good morning, Mickey.
Morning, guys. You all right?
Yeah, we're doing fine. How's the Achilles, by the way?
The Achilles is in a bad way. I snapped it in two places.
Yeah.
So pretty bad.
So it was a mixed night for you when you went down there. But the new stadium looks absolutely fantastic, doesn't it? I mean, it really is a special place. Do you think they can generate the sort of atmosphere needed to spur the boys on?
Well, certainly, having played in the Legends game and then went to Crystal Palace game the other night, I've got to be honest and say, wow, the atmosphere was incredible at times. And when that South Stand sort of uses its voice altogether, oh, God, it's something else. And it really is a magical stadium. And I think the atmosphere, whatever they did, I don't know what they did. I know that there's acoustics and what have you been inserted, but it's absolutely incredible when it's in full voice.
Yeah, and I mean, I asked Luther this, and I'm asking you as well. If you were going there as an away player, I mean, I'm assuming that Man City are big enough players to not be intimidated by the atmosphere. You'd want to go there and show them what you could do, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think that as a footballer, well, certainly I can only do the way I think. When I used to go to grounds, that used to give me a bit of stick, slaughter me before the game, try and put me off.
Yeah, sorry about that, Mickey. I can only apologise.
Yeah, the more it used to motivate me to play well. You know?
Oh, well, I'm not sorry then.
The better the stadium, obviously, the more motivated you become, because I mean, I've got no doubt Manchester City players will arrive at that stadium this evening, and they will be buzzing just as much as we are, because it's an amazing place to play. The pitch is incredible, the stadium is just out of this world, and the atmosphere is going to be absolutely electric, as it always is on European nights at the Lane in the past. Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be an incredible night, but no, they won't be intimidated at all.
So with that in, Mickey, how did Tottenham go about stopping them and going about winning this game against this City team, which he'll have everybody that he needs to have out on that pitch will be there tonight, won't they?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, make no bones about it. This is going to be one tough game. I'm not sure we could have got a tougher game, actually, because sometimes when you're playing against continental opposition, the style suits our play. We're actually playing against the best team in England. Who've shown over a few years now how brilliant they are. And it's going to be no easy game. But I've always said that on any given day, this Spurs team, when we click into gear, we're capable of beating anybody and beating them by a margin too. So you just hope that on the biggest of occasions that everybody clicks, everybody finds the right form, nobody's intimidated by the size of the game, by the size of the opposition. You just go out there, you believe and you play, and that's about the best you can do, and hope that everything goes your way. We're a very, very good side, and Manchester City will have to play well to beat us, but we'll have to play really well to beat them. So it's going to be a really exciting occasion, and I can't wait.
I was talking to Tottenham mates of mine and talking about Harry Kane and, you know, thinking he's really one of the best two or three strikers in the world now. But when he's in the team, do you think you get less from Son?
Well, I'm not sure about that. It's certainly because of his exploits when Harry was injured. It sort of, he was absolutely phenomenal, to be honest with you. And,
he was.
And maybe a patch of form that he's never reached before. So it's easy to suggest that Harry coming back into the team has influenced Son's impact. But no, I don't think so. I mean, Son's played with Harry long enough. It can happen, but I think that he knows Harry well enough and long enough now to for it not to sort of play on him. I mean, he's a great player in his own right. And as I said, he will be one of the key players this evening. If he clicks, if Dele Alli clicks, if Eriksen clicks and Kane click, then there's goals. They score goals against any opposition. So they're the four key players tonight for me.
And I know you mentioned your Achilles. So you're going tonight. Is there a lift there, by the way? It looks like there's a lot of stairs to go up.
Yes, there's a lot of lifts.
All right, OK.
There's a lot of lifts, and I will be on a wheelchair.
Oh, no.
Because I've got a big boot on. It's a bit embarrassing, I know. What you can imagine at Luther, can't you?
I can.
Driving around the stadium.
You've been walking with your head down, making sure nobody recognises you as you're trying to get through with that boot on.
I wear a balaclava.
Well,
it's embarrassing, but no, listen, it's one not to miss. It's the first European event at the new stadium, and no matter how much pain I'm going, so it doesn't matter.
No, fair enough. Mickey, good to speak to you. Enjoy your night.
Pleasure, guys. Pleasure.
See you soon. That's the former Spurs winger, Mickey Hazard. Yeah, he did his Achilles playing in the Legends game. I mean, Paul Gascoigne also came on for a couple of minutes and then went, that's enough, can't handle it as well. It comes a point when you just can't do what you used to do. I guess that happens to all of us.
This is Love Sport.
We're trying to work out how you beat Manchester City. Maybe get into the back four. It depends who's playing fullback for Spurs as well, who the wing-backs are,
yes,
really, because they've got a big part to play. If they can push the City wing-backs back and pin them back a little bit.
Yeah, that would be a big part of the game.
Because Mendy is not a great defender.
No.
I think
I think even at the weekend that Brighton had some joy down that side. What you'd not normally thought they'd have had.
They're definitely going to be targeting him if he's playing. Jamie has come into the room. Hello, Jamie.
Hello. Yeah, Danny Dyer's known for his cheeky sense of humour, isn't he?
He is, indeed.
I suppose he is.
He is. Well, he might have taken things a little bit too far. He basically said to Camilla, guest of honour Camilla, at the Olivier Awards, he said, there's no Charlie with you tonight. I'll pop up and see you later.
And Camilla would have laughed, wouldn't she?
No, it doesn't say whether Camilla laughed, but they actually had to cut that from the well, they basically it gets aired a few hours later.
Oh,
so
hilarious.
They cut that bit
out. Oh, no, that's funny, isn't it? And Charlie would appreciate that as well, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Guess, listen,
and she would not have been bothered by it at all.
I know, listen, Omid, who's a mate of mine, right, he's done plenty of bits and pieces for Prince Charles, and he tells me stories about Charles, and he's got a real sense of humour about him. And one feels that Camilla has as well. And so I don't think they would worry. Obviously, certain people would be scandalised that someone as common as Danny Dyer. But Danny Dyer's royalty. Anyway, Danny Dyer is related.
Can say that,
he's a relative. He's allowed to say what he wants.
That's right. Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I understand why they cut it, but it's pretty funny, I think.
I think it's funny as well. I mean, whenever anyone mentions anything sort of sexual to do with the Queen, everyone just goes, oh, can't believe you said that. Or even any royals, I suppose.
No, I don't think it makes... It's a very different royal family now, let's be fair. It's not the same as it was when Camilla and Charles were growing up. They're not stuffy like they used to be. Obviously, still have all that protocol and all the rest of it, and the dressing up on occasion. But you know what?
They're well on the way to be more, you know, to be more modern. Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
They are. I genuinely think they are. And so, good on Danny Dyer. That's
taking it on. Yeah, well done, Danny Dyer. Yeah. Flamingo was on the airport runway in Mallorca the other day.
A flamingo.
What was it doing there?
What was it doing there?
Trying to get out.
What was it doing there?
Itching a flight.
No one knows. Just stood there.
Right.
Standing there
on one leg.
Do they ever stand on two? I suppose they must.
They do.
They don't hop between the two.
Two legs never hit the ground at the same time.
Never seen
When they're putting the other one down, the other one lifts off, first of all. Right. They'd be disqualified from a walking race. Flamingos, they would. Right, so it was on a runway, this flamingo.
Yeah, jet passengers were shocked to see a pink flamingo on the runway as they arrived at Palma, Mallorca on Sunday. That's all the information I've got on it.
Okay, that's the first foreign place I ever went to, Palma, Mallorca.
Was it?
Yeah, it was a place called Arenal. And my dad booked it because it was a bit like Arsenal without the S. And we went to Arenal.
I know that.
In Palma, Mallorca. And I had a family holiday where my parents just railed for an entire 2 weeks.
Good fun then.
Oh, tremendous fun. Yeah, I couldn't swim either. The whole thing was fine. It was absolutely fine.
You could have popped over to Magaluf to kill some time a few nights.
It's probably a bit young for that.
I was 10.
Oh, right.
I was
you?
10. Yeah.
Oh, don't go to Magaluf when you're 10, though.
No.
Be in for a bit of a shock.
Is Magaluf a bit of a party town?
Oh, yeah, big time.
I don't think it was in 1973.
Right.
Yeah, it was a small village, I imagine, back then.
Small little fishing village.
Yeah, I guess. four Spanish guys. What are you doing here, young man? I'm not doing the accent.
These kids were in for a shock. They went to the cinema to try and watch a new Peppa Pig film, Festival of Fun.
Oh, did I go in the wrong cinema?
Well, no, they went in the right cinema, but unfortunately the cinema itself made a bit of an error by putting trailers up of the new horror film before the Peppa Pig
showing.
How
old were the kids?
So these kids are about two, watching Peppa Pig. And they were left potentially psychologically scarred.
For life.
Scary superhero film, Brightburn. It's got, the trailer includes dead bodies, a man being struck by a car, violence, children in a scary mask. And apparently some of the kids were left crying at this trailer.
Children in a scary mask. Luther wouldn't have liked that, would
he? No,
he
wouldn't have liked that.
Why is he wearing that mask? I don't care if he is from Mexico. Take it off. that's why Luther would have been scandalised. Well, that's a bit unfortunate. I mean, I'm sure the parents are going to have to talk him down. You know, a little bit, but, they'll probably get over it, won't they? Or maybe they won't.
Yeah, I think you're right. I watched Cocktail when I was too young. Remember Cocktail?
What, the Tom Cruise film?
Yeah. But I was really young. There is a bloke who's, I think he's cut by a broken bottle and he's there dead. And I remember that shocking me at a young age.
Well, spoiler alert. Cocktail. Really?
So these sort of things, when you're a kid, you know, a little kid seeing violence.
Yeah, but the trailer, they should not have put those trailers. It's true, right? Nowhere near it.
It's why we always have plastic cups in the studio now, because Jamie gets really funny in the glass. I always wonder what that was. That was Cocktail, was it?
That's
when you were five.
That's Cocktail's done that to me.
He really starts running out of the studio going, Jamie, it's just a glass bottle. Nothing's going to happen. Careful, don't break it.
There is a story about James Cracknell as well.
Crackers, as they call him.
Old Crackers.
I read her piece, Beverly Turner. It's Beverly Turner, is it? Beverly, I think... His ex-wife.
Yeah, his wife. They've just split up.
Right. And she wrote a very, very heartfelt piece about their divorce because he got a brain injury. And she said, when you're living with someone with a brain injury... it's a roller coaster. It is very difficult because you're essentially on Planet James all the time. That's what she was talking about.
Yeah, she was saying that the first 8 years of her marriage with him, he was quite a quiet man. And then after his brain injury, he was hit by a truck when he was cycling in America and he changed into a completely different man. He was suddenly more aggressive. He'd previously quiet and he suddenly couldn't stop talking. She used to go into the shower and just scream so the kids wouldn't hear. It sounds really terrible, almost like living with someone, you know, who gets Alzheimer's or dementia or something like that. Well, completely change your character.
That's what he said. He knew it as well. He said it was like living with, you know, for the first 8 years, you were one person. Second 8 years, someone completely different.
Yes.
You know, and
he had to redevelop his personality.
I mean, it happened to James Hammond as well, didn't it? James Hammond?
Yeah, he had a...
Richard Hammond,
yeah, the hamster.
The hamster, because he also, he fell off his wheel, didn't he, in his cage, and injured his head. He got injured in some car accident, didn't he?
Yeah.
And the same thing happened, much, much more prone to anger, all that stuff, his frontal lobe injury. I read that piece, and it was quite a sort of heart-rending piece, and they've split up, but they're still friends.
Well, yeah, it was quite sad. Well, she said she was supporting him in the boat race. She and her kids were watching it, but she said that the reason they were watching it is because she wanted the kids to realise that there was something behind this massive sacrifice he'd made to get away from marital duties and, well, fatherly duties, that he just basically, for the 8 months he was training and the 5 months before that, when his head was massively still on the race that was going to come, she said that, you know, he hadn't been a father as he had been before. But again, that's part of the head injury, I think, that he was so focused on this.
Well, yeah, but also, I'm not so sure about that. I think there was also, I mean, listen, it's a level of dedication required to be an athlete of any sort, but rowing, it seems like another level again. When you see what Redgrave went through and Cracknell went through, and by the way, he's 46 now, and we were talking about the boat race yesterday, and I don't care about the boat race. I generally don't. But the story from it was that a 46-year-old guy got himself fit enough to be in a boat with 21-year-olds.
And then won it.
And got him back, and he got himself back into that state by being completely focused to the point where he never spoke to his kids and he never saw his wife, and it obviously just got too much in the end.
Yeah. Well, she said this endeavour had taken their daddy away from home for 8 solid months. The kids needed to see that this enormous family sacrifice wasn't entirely in vain. Yeah,
was worth it. Yeah, it's sad, but I think everyone should read it just to know what if you're having to live with someone who's had one of these head injuries, you're not alone. There are other people going through this as well.
Yeah,
love sports.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning 6:30.